He will talk about estimation of functional soil organic carbon pools with diffuse reflectance spectroscopy.
Good morning. All right, good morning, everyone. I may be able to get us back on time, we'll see. I'm gonna introduce the project that we're working on right now. It's a really huge project, and I'd like to thank our funding agency, NRI, now NIFA, who has provided some good resources for us to work, but our PI and our co-PIs, Sabina Grunwald, Nick Comerford, especially have supplied a lot of extra resources to make this project work. It's a huge project, and I hope you'll understand why I say that. And today I'm specifically going to be talking about some of the earliest results we have coming back on estimation of total and labile carbon. And I'll describe what I mean by that in a minute. Okay, well, in case you haven't heard, carbon is a very important thing. People are talking about it all the time. We have some legislation in the works in regards to cap and trade that we may or may not see. I think most people know what the concept of ecosystem services are. And if we're going to be making subsidies or payments to people for making changes in the soil landscape or in the ecosystems for making improvements, then we have to have ways to understand the changes that are occurring, or and we have to be able to measure them. Well, the problem with carbon is that there is a great degree, as Gustavo just showed, an incredible degree of spatial variability. Well, on top of that, we also have this component of temporal variability, and we haven't even begun to address this problem. But what we need are stringent and useful, easy to apply measurement protocols that allow us to test or to look for differences in the landscape according to the treatments that we might apply. And to that end, we designed this project. We call it the Soil Carbon Project, the Florida Soil Carbon Project. And the goals of this project are to quantify soil carbon pools, fractions of soil carbon, across the entire state of Florida, and we'll, to also compare historic measurements of organic carbon to the modern measurements we're making now. We'll then relate those measurements to environmental factors such as soil suborder or land use and land cover to try to more narrowly understand how change in soil carbon has occurred in those strata, and I'll show you some of those strata in a moment. And then we have two very specific objectives, the first one being to make geospatial models or digital soil maps of organic carbon or carbon fractions across the entire state. And then secondarily, because we are generating this nice data set, and I thought I would just start by showing some results. These are the first results we got from this project. It's a map of total carbon. The bubble size indicates the percentage of carbon that's there. And it's a huge range in variation, as we saw just a moment ago. But this data set gives us an opportunity to use this new technique that is becoming more and more common to use diffuse reflectance spectroscopy and calibrate models to this really, really wonderful data set. And so the sample design is a stratified random design, and our strata, our soil suborder, and land use land cover. We have 11 soil suborders that we're using, and these were chosen to be the major important soil suborders in the state. Most of them, I think some soil orders that were less than say 4 or 5% were excluded from this, 4 or 5% of the land area. We also stratify by land use land cover, and these are the classes that we used to do that. In all, we had 89 strata as they came observed from the field. There were 69 designed. You don't always find what you think you're going to find when you get there. But our design covers 69% of the land area in Florida. And secondarily, we had this objective to compare historic carbon measurements with modern carbon measurements. And Florida has this really fantastic resource of a characterization database that was developed by NRCS and University of Florida in the Cooperative Soil Survey in the 60s and 70s and 80s. These are fully characterized pedons. There are about 1,200 locations, over 7,000 characterized horizons with full chemical, physical, and even water characteristics measured on these samples. It's a really, really excellent data set as well. And it's statewide. And what you see here in red are the sites that we chose to revisit so that we could compare the modern measurements we're taking. And then we have another set that we call the reconnaissance samples that are the black samples there. When we got done with the sampling phase at the beginning of the summer, we realized that we had some sparse areas and some of our classes were unfilled. So we needed to go back and do a second phase, and that's the white samples that are in the gray areas, and we have a total of 1,014 samples. Okay, and I put this slide here to remind me to tell you guys that when I say we did this or we did that in the field, it was really these three women that did it. And they did a really fantastic job of dealing with the public, of getting into locked gates, you know, through all kinds of people across the state of Florida in all kinds of conditions to get these samples taken. Really, really incredible effort. Now the samples, you saw the sample distribution were collected by going to the site with DGPS if we knew where it was before, or marking it with the DGPS. We took four sub-samples at each site with a small core, and I should mention here that we're talking about the top 20 centimeters of soil. So the core is 20 centimeters by 5.8 centimeters. At the location, a two-meter augering was taken to try to confirm what the soil suborder should be or identify what it is was if it could be. And this took over a year. And these are the methods that we're measuring: total carbon, inorganic carbon, soil organic carbon by subtraction of these two, hot water extractable carbon to sort of get at the Laibach fraction of carbon, and I'll describe that method in a minute. We're also measuring non-hydrolyzable carbon, which is an acid digestion. But I'm going to tell you today about some results from total carbon and hot water extraction, which is the first data sets that we've gotten back in September and October, actually. So our total carbon is by combustion analysis, using a pretty good size, half a gram sample, usually at 900 degrees Celsius. Hot water samples, 4 grams, were extracted in hot water, deionized water, by incubating for 80 degrees Celsius at 80 degrees Celsius for 16 hours, filtered and measured. Our spectra were taken on dry ground soils. We scanned them in this petri dish. We're using a spectral radiometer from ASDI. We designed this special purpose fixture to help us really improve the consistency we have between our measurements. See how it might works. We have the reflectance standard there. And this is what this data looks like. Many of you will be familiar with this data, but what you see are on the x-axis are the wavelengths from 250 to 2,500 nanometers, and reflectance on the y-axis. And so what you get is a really huge data set of 1,014 sites by 2,100 wavelengths. And so it's a real challenge to model and to make these predictions of soil organic carbon with data like this. It's extremely autocorrelated across this range, and it takes some specialized modeling techniques, chemometric techniques. So before you do modeling, and most of the results I'm going to show you today are about spectral pretreatments. We can use the bare reflectance value. We can compute log 1 over R. We can center and scale the data. This is called standard normal variate. And most of the results I'm going to show are about Savitsky-Golay smoothers. And Savitsky-Golay smoothers are moving window polynomial regressions that translate across the spectra. And you can change the bandwidth of the polynomial, in other words, the number of points that it's fitting. And you can also change the order of the polynomial, whether it's linear, cubic, quadratic. And so what I did in this initial presentation is to show you how changing the bandwidth from 11 nanometers down to 5 to 5 data points, 11 to 5 data points changes, and also how the different polynomial orders change. And then secondarily, you can take just the smooth spectra from the Savitsky-Golay smoother, or you can also take the first and second derivatives. And these have been very good in the past for calibrating with field data that's pretty noisy from sample to sample. Well, there's a lot of chemometric methods you can use to do this, and I hope I get a chance to talk about some problems I'm having with using some of these. I'm going to show you partial least squares regression results, but we will repeat these results and are in the process of repeating these results for every one of these modeling techniques. If I get a chance, I'll talk about MARS, or multivariate adaptive regression splines. What is my time? 4 minutes? Okay. Well, this is the problem. These data are highly skewed. And I've seen this in some other work and talked to some of you about this problem. This is total carbon, and the range, again, is from 0 to 50%. And so to really do the modeling well, we have to transform the data. We saw this in the last presentation, too. This was a total carbon, and it has a little bimodal peak down there on the lower right. But this is the hot water carbon, very similar, very skewed. This is how they compare to each other. Pretty correlated, but a bit of interesting differences that I'm looking forward to seeing. So we compare the models, or portions of the models, with the root mean squared errors. And this is a result of, this is a plot of root mean squared error on the y-axis with number of principal components, or number of PLSR components, on the x-axis. We're using a model and test data set framework of 70 and 30. And we identify the best model by minimum root mean squared error prediction. So again, there's a lot of model runs here, and a good way to look at it is by an image plot. So this is a Savitsky-Golay cubic first derivative. This is 11 nanometer bandwidth. This is 9 nanometer bandwidth, 5, or 7, and then 5. And some lines here will help delineate those. And the color is R squared. But we identify the best model with root mean squared error prediction. And our root mean, this axis of root mean squared error prediction is in the back transform units of TC. And these are the best R squared, or these are the points where the root mean squared error prediction was best in all these different types of pretreatments in PLSR regression. And the R squared was 0.85, and again, root mean squared error about 1.4. So overall, what we see is that just the smoothers are actually performing better, which is or as well as the derivatives, which is a bit unexpected. And this is a result from the model data set and the independent test data set. We can do the same thing for the hot water extractable carbon, and the R squared is a bit lower. The root mean squared error prediction isn't that much worse, but the R squared is a bit worse. And this is where I want to talk about the skewed data problem. And it's not just a skewed data problem. It's the spectral response of the organic carbon. These, again, are in log transform units. The R squared is okay, but you can see there's a lot of scatter in the data, particularly at the higher carbon end, the greater carbon. So, and if we back transform this into the carbon units, then these relationships are going to fall apart. They're going to be pretty poor. And so this is the modeling problem that I'm facing right now and dealing with this kind of data. Just to maybe illustrate that one quickly, if you could imagine that this axis is total carbon and this axis is reflectance, what you would see if you were looking at a single wavelength, say, for instance, 500 nanometers, is that you would have a really large group of high reflective samples that have low total carbon. And as reflectance decreased, your total carbon would increase. And you would have this really exponentially decreasing relationship between total carbon and reflectance. And this nonlinear relationship is the problem. And partial least squares is not able to untease this nonlinear relationship because it's consistent all the way across the spectrum. This is what you get when you use total carbon. You get a bad result if you don't log transform the data. So this is multivariate adaptive regression spline in total carbon units. I just want to show this to solicit some possible suggestions. It works better. It works better. And this is my conclusion. Again, the final goal is for us to calculate geospatial models, and this is our first result of that. And I just want to point out this semivariogram. The smallest range, or the smallest lag distance that we're really able to handle with this data set is 10 kilometers. And for us to be able to bring this down, to reduce this sill, and to be able to go down to a 5 or 1 kilometer lag distance, we need a technique like this one to do it. And I thank you.
So more work to do. This is actually what we are working on in our University of Florida group to crunch down and better model the fine-scale variability of soil properties, in this case also soil carbon. Now, unfortunately, we don't have, again, time for questions, so hold them for the discussion section.